It's Wednesday night. It's a few days after we thumped the Huns. It's a football fans podcast and the people behind CelticUnderground.net.
Here's what I want you all to do for me. Bang.
Sunday was absolutely fantastic, and so with the brilliant performance from Celtic and the ease with which we made it to 2-0 and the way that we smashed and burst the hype bubble around Rangers, decided to get two regulars on the podcast, Hullboy and Anthony Murray, to discuss the performance, to discuss some of the hype, to discuss the refereeing performance, to discuss the new boys, to discuss the transfer window, and to discuss the Europa League. So, I hope you enjoyed that. Enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, with Hullboy and Anthony Murray.
Use the views without clues. I refuse to blow a fuse. They even had it on the news.
Don't believe the hype. Don't believe the hype.
So we had the Glasgow Derby. None of the three of us, I don't think, were one of the select group of 800 people who got to go and sit at the game. So I'll go through. Hullboy, where were you? Where did you get to watch the game from?
I was just watching it at home. Still got a sports subscription, so just watched it in the comfort of my own, really. So, I mean, speaking of the 800, I presume that they'll now put that allocation further after the celebrations.
Yeah, well, that's a thing. They just don't want to see it, or maybe they'll just give themselves blindfolds so they don't have to, and earmuffs so they don't have to hear and see the Celtic supporters celebrating. Some way of avoiding having to put up with the Celtic fans celebrating. But yeah, even 800, I particularly noticed it in the last 5 minutes of the game. You could hear the 800 singing probably the last 10 minutes of the game. You could hear the 800 singing. And Anthony, where did you get to see it?
It was just in the headquarters of the Lubomir Moravchik Central European Celtic Sports Club, which is my apartment, using my legitimate Celtic FC subscription. Yeah, so not the most exciting.
But I'm glad that both of you were paying legitimately for your football subscription.
I find that it's the only option now with it. VIPs, the VPNs.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The creation of this second wave of internet scamming, it's impossible. I can't find any other game these days without, you know, the pop-ups and this and that. And so, you know, I'm down to just watching Celtic these days because I actually pay for it.
Okay.
Look, just as an aside, that's actually good value. I mean, I'm Celtic TV subscriber, and obviously you don't get the games live in UK and Ireland, but actually there's some really good stuff on Celtic TV.
Do you know the other thing just in general about TV coverage, because I was just looking at something to do with our revenue and it then prompted me to look, and I managed to find a Wikipedia page that had all the TV contracts for European football. And Scottish football from the next TV contract's actually not bad. We're on a par with similar-sized nations. The thing that really, really, really struck me was the Scottish TV deal has 48 live games, and everybody else's TV deals of the same ballpark as us, like the Norwegian one's 240 live games,
mm-hmm.
The Swedish one's 150 live games, so they're obviously just doing streaming of games all the time. Every game, live, you must be able to watch. For all those things. So, Anthony, the team was picked, and there was the usual social media, oh, I don't know if I'd have picked that team, stuff coming out from people. So what was your thoughts on the team?
Initially, I mean, in a situation where you don't have many other options, you know, what can you do? Having complained at length about the Cluj selection, you know, you should have played Julian, you should have played Bolly, you should have played McGregor when McGregor plays. You know, he solved those problems. So that was a good thing. I initially had already, I've kind of fallen for El Hamid before this game. I just like the cut of his jib. I just like the size of him, the speed of him, you know, the fact that he will eye up another fullback and go at him. So I think El Hamid looks quite good. So the fact he was there, I was quite happy. And I'm a total near beaten apologist and always will be. I'd always build a team around good midfielders rather than, you know, mediocre centre halves. And I'd always have a bit of faith with Beaton. Maybe there was the slight fear that, you know, Defoe or Morelles might get him on the turn. But ultimately, I certainly had belief that he'd go in and do a job. So I was quite happy with Beaton coming in playing next to Julian.
And Hullboy, what was your thoughts on the team?
Yeah, I think the starting point for me was realising that Murga wasn't going to play left back. So that was a big plus before our ball was kicked. And clearly he'd learnt the lesson from his previous action of him at back. I agree with Anthony about El Hamid. He does look quite assured. I think we've forgotten Beaton's been out for such lengthy periods. I think we've forgotten actually qualities he has.
Mm-hmm.
And he's obviously played in the centre of defence before. So from my perspective, I thought was that good as we were going to, you know, we have to believe that Simonovic was injured and that there was no other reason why he was left out. That was good for me. You know, I've been sticking by Bolingoli as well because it's a tough act to follow Kieran Tierney. You know, I was glad that he was playing and ultimately that he had a very good game.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about, and I was just Googling this to confirm something that I'd checked at the weekend, and about people talking about Nir Beaton being a midfielder playing at centre-half. Nir Beaton started playing at centre-half under Brendan Rodgers against Astana in 2016-17. And since then, he has played 51 games for Celtic, of which about four have been as a midfielder. Actually, for three seasons, he's played virtually his whole Celtic career as a centre-half. He's been a centre-half as long as Christopher Ayer's been a centre-half. So I don't think it's as, oh, I'm a playing with a midfielder at centre-half as much as people were making it out to be, because his last 3 years have been pretty much, I mean, he came on, of those 51 appearances, but three were as a sub at the end of last season under Neil Lennon, where I think twice he came on in the last 10 minutes, and I think twice he came on in midfield and once he came on as a centre-half. So it's not quite as makeshift centre-half as people are making out, because that's where his bulk of his Celtic's career has been in the last 50 games.
It's that thing, though. A good enough player against immense opposition will always be able to do it. You know, McNamara dropped into a back three. Chris Sutton dropped down, you know, to the back. And Beaton can do it. You know, good players can do it. When you come up against better opposition, that's when they get exposed. That's what happened to Sutton in the cup final in the 3-2 game. Maybe McNamara in Europe to an extent. And Beaton isn't obviously the answer in the Europa League or anything. But, you know, an easier way trip to Ibrox. Yeah, no danger.
Yeah, I'd go along with that. I think we've got certain players like Beaton. I think I'd include Ayer, even though he's still quite young, who have got the ability to read the game in a number of different positions, and providing they've got the physical presence as well. And I think that's where McGregor was square pegging around the hole, really, when he was filling in at that left back position, because his tackles against he can actually play as a left back. But other teams will pile the pressure on. With Beaton and they can read the game in almost any position. And I know I wasn't playing on Monday, but the fact that he's been playing it right this season just kind of emphasises that, really.
So another thing about that, you mentioned Elhamid, Anthony. Elhamid is, what, 6 foot three, 6 foot four, something like that. Julian is 6 foot four. Ayer is 6 foot five. Joso is 6 foot four. And Fraser Foster, 6 foot seven. Neil Lennon likes a big back four, doesn't he? Or back five, if you include the goalkeeper.
Mm. It looks like it.
And what's your thoughts about the fact that it looks like Fraser Foster's Celtic's number one goalkeeper?
I think that could be one of the best signings we ever make, even if it's a 1 year thing. You know, fingers crossed it's no. Fingers crossed he comes back, loves it, takes a pay cut, never leaves. But if you asked me, you know, any player that we could have back, he'd be the one I would have taken back.
It's such a
good age for a goalkeeper.
What age
do you know? He's 31. It's interesting, Andy, because I remember tweeting this time last season, Fraser Foster's now third choice at Southampton. We should bring him home. And lots of people then came on and said, no, we couldn't, because he's useless with his feet and Brendan Rodgers wouldn't go for that. So it's interesting, Andy, that's now out of the window with Neil Lennon being manager, that consideration.
Yeah, and I think it was, I mean, not had a lot on Sunday, Fraser Foster, but in terms of his distribution, I think, you know, when he needed to go along, if there were any moments of pressure, he didn't mess about. He wasn't trying to ping a pass out wide to a back already moving forward, which we saw so much with Craig Gordon. And don't get me wrong, Craig Gordon's done well for us over his time at Celtic, but even his long distribution isn't good. He doesn't find players. Whereas when Foster goes long, you actually know where aiming at, and it's usually in the right direction to one of our forward players.
So talking of going long, Andy, it was an interesting kickoff.
the Craig Levine moment.
Hoof it in the touch.
Well, it's funny because as we kicked, I was kind of looking, and I mean, I watched the game again, and I kind of thought, how did the ball get up there so quickly? You know, so, but it was. I mean, you can see now, and obviously reading the press and Lennon's post-match interview and comments, that was deliberate tactic, and it was done to avoid some of the calamity that we faced last season. Because regardless of their ability or lack of ability, any team like that is going to come out. Is going to come out the tracks. And funnily enough, before we took the free kick, before we took the kick off, I was actually glad that we were kicking off the game. I didn't expect that to happen, but I think that's good for us, because if you can keep the ball, that helps. But obviously, Celtic had just decided that they were going to play that pressing game.
So, Anthony, what did you think of that tactic?
I think, to some, it was even funnier with the fact that I've still never really adapted to the whole, you know, one guy takes centre thing. Uh-huh. You know, that's still relatively new. Mm-hmm. So, but that's the first time I've seen a guy just literally just gun it. Do you know what I mean? Just not even pretending that something else is going to happen here. Just kick the ball as hard as you could into the corner. And the fact that Edouard's early touches are usually pretty ropey anyway, it just added to it. It's like, all right, this is full Edouard at this point. You know, what's he doing? But it was obviously we poured up the park, and it was, you know, one of my concerns before the game was, I mean, justifiably so, the previous two trips to Ibrox, our midfield had been so, I don't know if it was lackluster or tired or what, but that early press by McGregor, Christie and Brown really owed us a game. And he came up massive. So I'm really pleased for that. You know, I've been a critic of Brown in the past. So for but justifiably so, I think he did owe us a game at Ibrox. And for him to lead that and lead the three of them on that charge in those first 20 minutes was brilliant. It really, it put their three jokers in their place. Because of those, their three, Davis is the only one that I rate at all. Arfield's a shitebag that played for Falkirk. That the other one, Jack. Jack's a joke footballer. Do you know what I mean? He's a Gary Caldwell, a guy that's in a parallel universe is not playing at this level. And the fact that he's, you can almost see in his eyes that he's starting to realise it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, after a day like the other day, he'll go home and look in the mirror and realise, you know what, I'm not going to stop 9-0. I'm not going to stop 10-0. I'm never going to be a champion with Rangers Football Club. It's not going to happen. And it's in his eyes. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, I'd echo that. I think, you know, what we saw on Sunday was, and we'll probably get on to talking about the whole media thing pre-match in terms of the bumming up Rangers. But essentially, we have got better players all over the park than them. One of the ways I look at this is, okay, he can get a hidden gem from a lower club, but they are constantly shopping in that kind of lower English league standard market. And I think your comments, Anthony, about Jack, absolutely spot on. You know, he couldn't cut it anywhere else. And Christie and McGregor, Brown, absolutely streets ahead of the likes of him. Arfield's, even if he was anywhere decent, he's finished. He's finished as a player.
We'll get on to your media thing actually just now, Hallboy, about the thing that, see the end of the game? I just wanted to say, well, I did actually, go online and just say, get it right up you to the press, because and I actually don't tend to come across the media that much, because you create your own, you know, Twitter world to some extent. I listen to podcasts in the car, so you're not. But Friday night, I sat down and I've put on the telly and Jim White said, so we'll go across to Ibrox now. On Friday night, we'll go across to Ibrox now for a preview of the, as he calls it, the Old Firm game. And honestly, I sit and listen to it thinking, I don't think you could have any worse a presentation if this was on Rangers TV. It was about Stevie Gerrard this, Stevie Gerrard that, Rangers are this, Rangers are that, Rangers started the season. And then it was, I mean, granted, Celtic have won the last 9 trophies and have won the last 8 league titles, but Rangers, Rangers, Rangers. And it really pissed me off. And then, by chance, on Saturday morning, I came across, somebody had sent me a thing, Twitter link, to The Sun. And it was only David Friel in The Sun who didn't think that Rangers would score. And I think it was David Friel and one other guy thought it would be a draw. And everybody else, it was a comfortable David Rangers win. And then there was the Daily Record where they had a guy saying Celtic would win 4-0. Rangers would win 4-0. And then just before the game kicked off, I sent a text to someone saying, it's a shame that we're about 15 points. I've not got a league table in front of me, but it's a shame we must be about 15 points behind Rangers. The way that Sky were talking about the game pre-match. I mean, you're a bit more detached from it, Anthony. But were you conscious of... Everything was all from the Rangers' perspective.
I wasn't. Obviously, I'm watching it on Celtic TV, but I'd listened to a couple of Radio Scotland podcasts beforehand. And, I guess you'd sense their growing confidence. But, I mean, you look at the previous results. You know, they've scraped by a couple, haven't they? They haven't been tearing up the league like we have, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, from that end, I'm not going to lie, I think some of the hype on the end of the last Glasgow Derby defeat was still lingering. you know, because one of the things I'm realizing on the back of this result is, you know, we've got so blasé about winning these games under Rodgers that, you know, the high or the low of doing it, you know, isn't as severe.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the high, you know, we've all been on, no doubt, for the last 3 days. So if you could bottle it, do you know what I mean? It's one of these things when, you know, knobhead, non-Old Firm or non-Celtic Rangers fans go on about, do you know what I mean? Like we're missing out on something by being Celtic fans. It's like, you've no idea what this feels like.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If you're an Aberdeen fan or a Hibs fan, you know, God bless them. They have no idea how we feel right now. We're the luckiest people on the planet right now to have, you know, enjoyed that this week. And but the low that came from it, you know, for the last 3 months has been pretty desperate. Would you not agree?
What's your thoughts, Andy?
Yeah, I kind of go along with that. I think the high is there. I think the high was accentuated this time as well because of that build up. And you know, I mean, I was kind of doing some double takes on some of the things that I was reading and looking at, and you tend to think, but the only thing that you could actually point to in terms of the pre-match, in terms of where Celtic might be slightly exposed, was how that defence was going to line up. And particularly if it was going to include, as it did, some of our newer signings. But going forward, we've been absolutely fantastic under Leonard. The debacle of the Cluj game, you know, we were still scoring, you know. Yeah. It wasn't as though we kind of like lost to a late single goal, you know. So, and as Anthony points out, that they've struggled in some of their games. They got a good win against Hibs on paper, but you've got to remember, Hibs were actually down to 10 men in that game. Mm-hmm. For, I think, certainly most of the second half, if I recall correctly. And at the end of the day, that, you know, I mean, you look at their lineup, and I wasn't really that bothered. They picked Defoe or Morelos, because Defoe is passed it. He's passed it against any half decent opposition, and if they with Morelos, which we actually saw when he came on, Morelos is always going to lose the head. He can't. He's completely fundamentally lacking in any discipline for a professional footballer.
Do you know? For me, you saw when Morelos came on when. You know, they live in this fantasy land of the VAR. You know, I know there's Celtic podcasts, but I just need to touch on this because it's top. You know, because you can't not be interested in Scottish football, not come across the fantasy land that they live in about the value of Morelos as a player. And you saw when he came on, when he's such a valuable player that in the biggest game domestically they've had this season, the manager doesn't start him. So that shows you what the manager thinks of him. And then when he comes on, he's the first time he gets within sight of goal, he's like 40 yards out and shoots. And then the other stuff he does is just try and niggle people by... He rakes down Brown's leg, he stands on Julian's foot. He's just an average player who tries to gain an advantage by nipping and stamping on people.
I think his goals record kind of... you know, put the fear in me and the hype, you know, goals and hype are, you know, they're going to get into you. But that first chance, you know, as soon as he bombed through and then skelped it into the crowd, it was just like, ah, right, he's really not that good. Do you know what I mean? There was no way the equivalent, you know, a Dembele or a Edouard or Henrik Larsson or whoever, or even a Billy Dodds or something, you know, they would have forced the keeper to make a save there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? The guys that scored in these games would have forced a save there. And he was through and he just swung and, you know, it was a shocking attempt. You know, it was amateur stuff. Yeah. And it really was quite, all right. There was an immediate deflation of, all right, that fear didn't last long. We're okay here, aren't we?
Do you know, it's in these games in particular that I really notice how good a player Edouard is.
Yeah, I was going to say that for all the media talk up Morelos, certain sections of the media have actually talked about Edouard. You know, I think Walker at one point earlier in the season, you know, saying, well, oh yeah, Edouard, he only tries in the big games. And I mean, that's, you know, it's just incorrect. What Edouard does is he proved in the big games he can do it. The thing is, Sunday again just showed Edouard is absolutely miles ahead of Morelos in terms of ability, attitude, temperament, however you want to define it. He's you know, for me, it's a slightly different player from Dembele, but Edouard will sold up at some point. Edouard is going to go for another kind of 20 million plus for absolutely sure of that, whereas I can't see Morelos. I can see Morelos going, but I can't see them getting anything like that, the amount that they've been claiming they get.
And I think actually they painted themselves into a corner, Morelos, because they've talked about turning down massive bids for him. He is a top of the championship £6 million player.
I think that's pushing it a bit.
Yeah.
Look at Pookie at Norwich and look how he's doing. And I think I may have said it even on the podcast before, but Pookie was always a player there. Pookie's problem was playing for a club like Celtic.
Yeah.
You need a certain type of temperament. And I think him at Norwich is probably a perfect fit for him in terms of his own character. But Pookie, in terms of his ability and his attitude and application, he's streets ahead of Morelos. Morelos couldn't play at that championship level. I'm convinced of it. He ended up going to one of the Turkish teams, something like that, where they love that kind of, I know it's generalising, but they love that kind of temperament and attitude and, you know, kind of those kinds of characteristics in the player.
So enough of them. Anthony, I sent somebody a text in the third minute, I think it was, saying we are different from what we were in the last two visits to Ibrox. You could see it straight away. So what were your thoughts in the first, right up to the goal, what were your thoughts when we Celtic were playing?
I was really pleased that we got through, you know, the first 20 minutes. I loved the way, I think the message I'd fired to people was that I'm just loving the way they're hunting, particularly Christie. I love the way Christie plays, like, you know, I've probably said this before, like a video game player that someone's bashing the sprint button. Do you know what I mean? You're going to exhaust your player by doing it, but, you know, you want to do it. So when he's hustling, and also sometimes when he's running with the ball, he really does peg it. You know, he guns it. And I love that about him. I absolutely love that about him. And he was doing it. McGregor was doing it. Brown was doing it. Forrest had a quiet game, but defensively he was doing really well. He was doing his job as well, getting back, falling in. So we had that period where, you know, we hadn't let in a stupid goal. They'd clearly thought, oh, we'll come out and bloody their noses, and then didn't. And then we were, you know, it was a typical game. It was going back one way and the other, but they weren't getting chances against us. And I felt totally comfortable. And it was just that feeling that all we needed was Brown or Johnston to get a break. Do you know what I mean? All we needed was one of our thinkers to just get a little break and something might happen. And that's exactly what happened. You know, one, obviously shoddy bit of defending, bad pass out, but the way Johnston jumped on it was, you know, that's why you have a player like that. You know, he just, as soon as he got it, it was like a training drill, just acceleration into the space, boom. Watching it again today before we started, Edouard's step back is brilliant. You know, it's the most deliberate I'm not being offside here you'll ever see, you know. He really just pumps the brakes, steps back, and then they fall for it, and then boom boom, and all of a sudden, you know, he's through one on one. and slots it like it's the easiest thing in the world. You know, how many times does he do that? Do you know what I mean? You don't have pictures in your head of Edouard missing chances. Do you know what I mean? He either doesn't get chances or he scores chances. I can't think of him not finishing that, you know?
Do you know the thing for me that showed how easy he made that look was how difficult Hayes made the second goal
yes.
look?
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Andy, what did you think of the goal?
Yeah, I mean, the goal was superb. I think just to echo some of the things Anthony was saying, the only time I was worried was when Defoe looked as though he was maybe going to get a shot away. There was an error.
That's right.
And then El Hamed made an absolutely brilliant tackle, absolutely brilliant timing of it and everything. But, you know, there was nothing that the commentators could do to try and create any kind of grey area around whether that was a clean tackle or not. It was just absolutely brilliant. But I think the other thing for me is before we got the goal, I think we were already beginning to see not just the pattern of static pressing, but we were starting to ping the ball about a bit. And they were trying to ping the ball about a bit, but again, their deficiencies were shown because, you know, the misplaced passes were already coming. And it doesn't matter who you are, but if you're Celtic and you see the opposition players making those errors or mistakes, that gives you an even further lift and gives you even more confidence. And I think the goal was just symptomatic of how the game was developing at that point, where the combination of Celtic's press and Rangers not necessarily panicking but not being able to see an out ball, which is why Goldson misplayed that pass, because all of the options that he thought would normally be available to him if they were playing against less position, they'd all been already closed down by Celtic. So
do you know,
he made that pass.
I was listening to the Radio Scotland podcast on Monday morning. They were talking about it, and they were talking about Celtic's first goal as if it was, you know, it was part of the general theme. They were talking about that Gerrard had made a mistake in the Rangers setup and the Rangers system, and how it worked in last season, and he tried to copy it. Forgive me if I'm wrong, but was that not very similar to one of our goals at Celtic Park in the second game at Celtic Park, where was it not Goldson did the same thing where he passed it straight to McGregor?
Yeah. I mean, their central defenders are really, really poor. Goldson's very poor. And I think, again, you know, we've been doing some comparisons, we've been talking about the game, but I think Julian just kind of emphasised that perfectly. You know, Julian just, it's like being playing at Celtic for two seasons, that he was, you know, just completely comfortable in what he was doing. But to get to the goal, I think, you know, Edouard, he is so cool. As soon as you realise that he was onside and he got that ball, his first touch was fantastic. He just knew that was going to be a goal. There was no way. McGregor, who actually, he can be a decent shot stopper, even on one-on-ones, but you just knew that Edouard was going to score that goal. Absolutely fantastic.
Which actually gets me back to your comment about the El Hamed tackle. The other thing that was going through my mind as Defoe came through for that one was how big Fraser Foster was just in the process of making himself look absolutely enormous for it.
Yep.
So I actually was also having confidence that Fraser Foster's going to save this. Whereas it was the complete opposite. As soon as Edouard's through, you thought he's just going to slip this under McGregor, and he did. So the rest of the second half, Anthony, how did you feel that went?
I mean, getting to half time with the lead is always brilliant. You can go in singing, they're all miserable. I mean, I think they changed some players. I don't know who they are. You know, do you know what I mean? They might be good, they might not be.
Yeah.
They took someone off. We kept it the same at first, didn't we? Then we picked up the injury with Beaton.
Yeah.
I was gutted for Beaton. He looked really frustrated to, you know, have suffered that injury. But I loved the kind of sort of dead eye stare that El Hamid had. You know, El Hamid was called over to speak to Lennon. And Lennon was obviously, you know, yabbering away in his ear in, you know, Northern Irish tongue. And El Hamid's just like nodding, like, aye, yeah, exactly, sure. And he just runs back, you know, it's just basically, right, go into the middle, be a hard man, you know, do everything you need to do, play it safe, whatever he tells him. And he just looked so in the zone, just like, yeah, I can do that, no problem. And then, was it Bauer? Yeah, Bauer came on the right.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that was really sort of relaxing, just to see that and to kind of think he's gonna be all right here. You know, like that tackle in the first half had already made you think, you know, he's up for this. And some of his forward touches as well, it's like this guy can play. So when he fell back in there, I think he went to the left side, didn't he?
He did. I thought it was interesting. I thought they would just shuffle everyone along one spot. Yeah. But they actually kept Julian where he was. And moved him to the other side of him, to the left side of the...
But yeah, the first thing he did there, you know, was good. You know, it worked. And you were just like, again, it was just like, all right, we're not in any trouble here. This guy's going to do a good job. I think one thing we haven't mentioned yet is Bolly's performance. I'm not getting too excited about Bolly's. You know, I've been a Bolly apologist already on the podcast. I don't think he's that brilliant. I'm not trying to, you know, hang him out to dry, but there was moments where he didn't, like there was a sloppy header back at one point that gave Morales his second chance. Mm-hmm. There was a quick free kick they took at left back when Bolly fell asleep, and brilliantly Brown bailed us out. Brown did a run to the near post and, you know, put it out for a corner.
Yeah.
So of the bunch of them, I'd say Bolly probably the weaker game, but we got away with it because Brown, Julian and El Hamid and Beaton all did very, very well. So that'd be my one slight, not criticism, but observation that I don't think just because we got a clean sheet the other day, he'll hold his place over Taylor, mm-hmm. having brought him in. I think that would be a smart, safe decision. But yeah, I was quite confident approaching the latter stages of the second half that we were going to hold out.
Yeah, Andy, I really got the impression we came out in the second half to just ensure that we controlled the game. Don't do anything silly, because exactly. We're in control of this game.
Exactly, and I think that phrase in itself means something different under Lenny. As opposed to under Rodgers, because I think Rodgers' way of controlling the game was more about having a greater percentage of possession, mm-hmm. during the game, which, as we all know, you know, we had some fantastic achievements under him, but the supporter got frustrated about the ball being played across the back too much and without penetration. And I think what Lenny's teams sacrifice is some of the percentage possession, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we sacrifice full control, because we actually controlled the game when we were without the ball through the press that we talked about earlier, and closing their players down, forcing them into errors. I think the thing for me as well, second half, I think the attitude was brilliant in terms of, you know, touched on the likes of Bauer coming on. I mean, he made some great interventions which resulted in corners when Rangers were trying to pressure us. But you could see that he was fully in the zone. He was really kind of, you know, working with the rest of the team. He was more or less saying to them, look, I'm part of this now.
Yeah.
And we're going to make sure that we're not going to concede anything. And that, for me, was fantastic. I think I think just to touch a little bit more on Ballingolly, I think what Sunday showed was that Ballingolly can actually be part of that kind of like attacking threat in the same way that Tierney was. Mm-hmm. And I think what we might have to endure is that sometimes his defensive work might not be top notch, and that's okay if he makes mistakes and we kind of get away with it, but I think attacking wise, you know, I think we won that game in part down the left on Sunday because of the attacks that were going on down there, and as Anthony said, Forrest was quite subdued relatively on Sunday, and he played a more defensive role. I think the other thing for me as well is just you know, talking about how our players performed, it once again showed how inept Tavernier is for them. He's an awful defender, so
he cannot
defend. And I saw that. Did you see the Twitter thread that guy had put up of all the incidents where Tavernier has just been thoroughly exposed in terms of his poor defensive work? Amazing.
I think that's something that was one of the reassuring things for us, though. You know, versus previous Celtic teams, you know, our recent right back problems, there was an assurance that, you know, even if Bauer or El Hamid were going to get beat, you know, they might force a corner, but it's not going to be an easy corner, an easy cross into the box. Mm. You know, we've had a couple of years of truly shocking right back performances in games when it mattered.
Yeah,
and this was completely different. This is a game changer, you know. Which now to project to their new messiah, I'm not convinced their new messiah is a new messiah. I'm just convinced he had a very easy gig for the last couple of years against us.
Well, do you know, I'll read you, can't go again into hand, there's a mate of mine who's a big Rangers fan who has twice texted me saying, I'd like to see this Ryan Kent that my fellow Rangers fans are talking about, because the one I saw last season was pretty crap and had four decent games, two of them against you.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think he's the definition of a panic buy.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, for a start, it's $2 million. They're paying £7 million in instalments because it's £2 million up front, and they'll see where they get it. But you're right. And the other thing I thought, so we may get on to this before the other stuff I was going to talk about, because you've touched on it, Andy, is the difference in game management and the difference in style between, in a big game like that. It's the first time you've really seen a massive difference in the attitude of how you approach a big game under Brendan Rodgers and Neil Lennon. And I'm not saying one's right and one's wrong, because I enjoyed both of them when they were successful doing their system.
Yep.
But Brendan Rodgers' way of doing it is, as you touched on, Andy, you control a game by keeping the ball all the time. But you can have the risk and reward of defenders making mistakes doing that. Neil Lennon's team reminded me, I always remember just before the Seville season, there was a documentary on BBC Two about Clough. I remember watching that documentary and thinking, we're going to do really well under Martin O'Neill, because it was after the first season of Martin O'Neill, or second season, and it was talking about how Clough was very much in the line of defenders, you defend. Midfielders, you get the ball off the defenders when they've defended it and pass it to the forwards. Forwards, you put the ball in the back of the net. And the players were all saying he made it really simple. And the thing that struck me on, the big difference for me on Sunday, was the defenders defended.
Yeah.
You know, their job was not to try and get the ball, retain possession and play out from the back. You know, getting back to your point about, we'll just make sure they get a corner because they're not going to get the cross in, because I'm not going to be trying to bring the ball down, chest it and play it on. And I'm not saying one's right and one's wrong, I just, that's the difference. Andy, what did you think of that?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, that's it in a nutshell for me. It is about kind of like simplifying the game slightly. My only slight I wasn't sure about Lenny getting the job permanently, similar to a lot of other sports, and that, I guess, basically, we all have to reacclimatise and adjust our own thing. And one of the things that I was worried about in games last season was that we were surrendering possession. But I feel more comfortable with, maybe partly because we're getting the results, which helps. But I actually think as an attacking unit, that takes away some of your misgivings and concerns about us surrendering possession more, because I'm not saying every time we go up the park, but we are creating lots more clear-cut chances. That's the thing for me. And under Brendan, we had a lot of the ball in the opposition's half, but we were playing across the line, across the 18-yard box a lot. And now I think we're much more penetrating, much more clinical. The movement is very good, and that's a combination of, I'm sure, Lenny's approach in terms of his coaching and management, but also the fact that we've been able to have players playing for us again who make the difference. So Christie and McGregor in their natural positions are the obvious ones. But I don't think we should underestimate how Mikey Johnson's been such an influence this season. He's fantastic on the ball. And I remember, may have been you, Anthony, raving about Mikey Johnson, when he was still playing at youth level. But he's got absolutely wonderful feet.
He does, and the thing that I really noticed on Saturday. So your point, Anthony, about Ryan Christie being a video game player who runs about on speed. So he runs down closing people down, and if the ball gets to him and he's facing goal, he'll create something. And so every player, and the thing that really struck me, there were four players on Sunday who could receive the ball when surrounded by Rangers players, retain the ball and take it and move it on. You know, and like, not just I'm surrounded by players, so I'm giving it straight back. I actually receive the ball, deal with it, suck the Rangers players in more before moving it on. And the thing that really struck me was those players where we know Callum McGregor can do it, we know Ncham can do it, we know Edouard can do it. The thing that really struck me was how many times Mikey Johnson received the ball with three Rangers players around him. And then he did that Sean Maloney and Samaras thing, to touch on one of my favourites, is if he couldn't create something from it, he got a foul.
That's the thing that's really I'm noticing about Christie and Johnson, particularly when you're 1-0 up away at Ibrox.
Uh-huh.
They're almost, despite being kids, you know, pretty young players, I guess they've just come through a generation where the stuff they're doing, to some extent, it's the same shit that Porto did to us in the UEFA Cup final that drove us absolutely spare. But do you mind, they're smart enough to win a foul and then we're 1-0 up, absolutely no rush to take it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? We are not, you know, there's no pressure on us whatsoever. So you do that thing where you say, I'll take it. And then you say, oh, no, you take it. You just kill seconds.
And then you go, oh, do you know what? You know, I can't take it before. My left sock's a bit loose.
I need to fix my sock. All that stuff is brilliant. And those guys do it. It's wild, isn't it? It must be a generational thing.
So before we get on to the second goal, Anthony, what did you make of the referee? What did you make of Bobby Madden?
I'm going to give him 5 stars. Genuinely. I've scribbled down the issues that I seem to pick up on. The Jack bolly for me, a legit 50-50. I'm not saying that's a red.
You see, I think that's a red.
Yeah, I think that's a red.
He's got a straight leg with his studs showing.
It's not that bad. It's not spectacularly worse than McGregor's.
No, I think McGregor's was a yellow.
I think McGregor's probably was a yellow, but I don't think the other one was any significantly worse. And I think McGregor's tackle affects the game big time. Because, you know, Arfield, whoever in the last game thought they had the, you know, the freedom of the city, you know, mm-hmm. to swan about that midfield. That's exactly when I was still coaching in Bratislava last year, the team that I ran, trying to get boys to make that tackle early on, just be aware I might kick you at any time. Do you know what I mean? It's just that it's the, you're not trying to hurt someone. It's not the reducer, but it's just I'm here. Do you know what I mean? It's just I'm up for a battle here. And that McGregor tackle just, you know, Arfield basically shat it for the rest of the game because he's like, all right, any one of these guys could club me, which is what you need to do in that game. You know, a Celtic Rangers game. You can't not do that tackle. They've done it to us a million times.
Well, I did think part of the problem in the last two visits to Ibrox, they were doing those tackles and we seemed indignant about it. And I did think maybe Lennon has sat there and said, you know what? We're going to do those tackles too until the referee stops them.
Yeah.
I'm a wee bit different to you, Anthony. Sounds like I'm more with you, Andy. I think McGregor was a yellow card. I think Jack was a definite yellow and maybe a red. And the other thing that got me, see the Arfield tugging back in Cham?
Yeah, that's one, hilarious.
Which I know, like, you've seen it before, actually. Arfield then knows he's going to get booked for it, so he's just not going to stop. Yeah. The thing that got me was how long, I mean, I know it was probably only a second, but it just seemed that Bobby Madden only blew for the foul once and Cham was about to turn around and kick him.
Yeah. Theoretically, he's playing an advantage.
Yeah, but by the time he blew, the advantage had long gone because Incham had been was pulling. Well, Incham's running, pulling 20 stone along.
Well, maybe the ref's thinking, right, he's not going to hold on forever. Do you know what I mean? And at the point that he lets go, there's going to be this sort of elastic ping that's going to launch Incham 10 meters up the park. You know, so you know there was space there, but. I don't know. I wasn't too bothered with that. And ultimately, the last one, which was weird, because on Celtic TV, you know, it was obviously a horrendous tackle, the Jordan Jones career-ending red card.
He's an idiot.
I think it might... I've always kind of ranked Lambert's goal in 98 and Sutton's dink in the whitewash as my favourite Glasgow derby moments. I think this might have just gone number one. Jordan Jones knee snap. But I was watching the YouTube version of it earlier and the sound, like the Celtic TV, I don't think Celtic TV had any mics in the stadium because you couldn't hear them singing, you couldn't hear us singing, you couldn't hear anything. But the sound on the YouTube version of that tackle is harrowing. Do you know what I mean? He really tried to hurt that boy. And what I loved watching it back was Bauer's sort of step over and little dash that sucked him in. Do you know, he looks like a player. You know, if you judge him just on that, you know, he looks like he'll bomb by the odd fullback, you know, if he gets the chance. So I quite like that. But the fact that he just came flying and hurt himself, oh, that was hilarious. And he got his red. That was brilliant.
I mean, it's absolutely brilliant because not only has he got a three-match ban for it, but the three-match ban is going to come after 6 months out.
Really?
Well, I don't know. Some length of time because he's done himself a bad injury.
Well, he's got a bad injury and presumably he will be lower down the pecking order now because they obviously signed Kent. I think the thing for me... echo some of what Anthony is saying there, that it was just brilliant to see Bauer not get too involved in that. It was almost kind of as though he got himself up, dusted himself down, and more or less was looking at Jones as if to say, is that the best you've got? And it was an absolutely horrific, horrendous challenge. Any professional player that does that... I mean, as you say, he'll get his three-match ban, but that's an absolutely shocking, cowardly kind of challenge. I think if we just rewind slightly, we were talking about Ncham Shorts, and Cham was outstanding when he came on, absolutely outstanding. And that was the only way, when Arfield was pulling him back, that was the only way they were going to get anywhere near him. He was absolutely top notch. And I know people blow hot and cold about Ncham, but I think Ncham, in those big games, when he teams up with Edouard and Christie and McGregor, his awareness is fantastic.
Well, he's a prop. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, I just think if I was Neil Lennon, you'd be having this type of conversation of, you're a French under 21 player, and I know you want to go and play for somebody else. You want to go to Porto or something like that. Do you know how you go and play for Porto? I know you're the best midfielder in this team. So what you're going to do is see between now and January, play like the best midfielder in our team, particularly in the Europa League games and in the big games that we play that other people are going to watch. And then someone like Porto will come back in for you at the 12, 15 million quid that we want and that you want, and you'll get the move you want. Huffing about will not get it. That's what I'd be saying to him.
He's a strange player because I agree 100%. He's a proper footballer. You know, he's a top class footballer. He's strong as well. But of all the great Celtic players, Celtic have had, I've never seen a good player have as bad a game as he had away at Hibs last year. Mm-hmm. Do you mean his ability to be absolutely garbage?
Yeah.
Is very oddly there. I know he's quite young, and you can make excuses for him. When he's bad, he's terrible, or has been. But when he's good, he's as good as any midfielder we've had in the modern era. You know, he's a properly brilliant footballer.
So then we come to the second goal, the final goal, which my dad thinks I am a brilliant visionary, because I was watching it on something I'll tell you about offline, I got a text. So I found out for the second goal I was watching about 30 seconds behind real time, because I got a text message that just said fucking magic. But not in a sarcastic fucking magic, right? And I came in, looked at it, and then Julian heads the ball clear, and I turned to my dad and I said, the ball comes to Hayes, and I turned to my dad and said, we're going to get a second here. Hayes is going to go up the park and score. And then we go through, and then when McGregor saves it, I'm thinking, how the fuck did we score from here? So Andy, talk us through that second goal.
Well, I mean, they were just trying to lump it forward. I think one, if not two, of their central defenders were moving up front, and as you said, Julian, he was tall. I was surprised when you said earlier he's 6'4". I thought he was taller than that, looking at him, but he just won that header cleanly. And as soon as you saw that drop to the Celtic player, you could see the speed with which Hayes, Edouard and Cham were shifting through the gears in no time at all. And it's funny you saying that you were watching it on a delay, and therefore you knew already that they'd scored and could predict it, but I was pretty sure that we were going to get a second from that when we were still going over the halfway line, because you could see that they were absolutely nowhere. And the only thing, and because he was so close in, that's why Hayes managed to get a second bite of the cherry, because he should have scored with his first shot, but it didn't really matter. And for me, by that time, a second was thoroughly deserved, because we could have had a couple of others earlier, and the game definitely would have been out of sight.
Do you know, there's so much, Anthony, in the last few years that they have reminded me of our darkest times in the 1990s. That, you know, you do go on a run where you've gone to Pittodrie in one, and you've gone to Easter Road in one, and so we're about to play the old Rangers, and you're thinking to yourself, no, actually, I think actually this season we're doing all right. And then they win 2-0. and you realise, no, this isn't our season gone. And the second goal reminded me of games against them in the 1990s, where there was lots of huff and puff from us, and you're just hoping and hoping for that one break, and then sometime in the last 2 minutes, they run up the park, score the second goal, go mental, and you're just utterly deflated. It just reminded me so much of that, and that you're desperately trying to persuade yourself, oh, that it wasn't a 2-0 game, but it was.
Yeah.
So do you think that game amply showed the gulf between the two sides?
I think what it shows is that the players we've spent money on are decent. Do you know what I mean? You know, Julian is going to be, you know, when we, you know, all those different stats that, you know, you're thinking, you know, if he's half the player Bobo Baldi is, you know, as all those parallels with him.
Yeah.
And he's exactly what I want in a Celtic team and exactly what we need. And that's the first game, really, you know, where he stepped up. You know, a big game. It's one of the biggest games in the world. There's no doubt about it. And he showed up and he put in a, you know, a heroic performance, the same as the rest of the team did. But that's your gulf. You know, we're looking at their centre-halves and saying, you know, they're basically juggling one Diddy from another. And we've potentially got a bunch of really good ones. With one particular, I think Julian and Ayer could be a great partnership going forward. You know, sort of Bobo and a Mialbi.
Yeah.
You know, if we were looking for parallels. The reality is that, I mean, I don't know, these guys they've brought in from England might be good players, you know, might tear Motherwell and Hibs to shreds, but they're not going to tear Cal McGregor and Forrest and our guys to shreds. Yeah.
Well, they signed a Swedish centre half who's so good that he doesn't get in their European squad.
Well, when they signed him, I thought he was a right back, and I was actually saying to people, you know, why are we not signing Sweden's right back? But I think I was partly influenced by the fact I was in Bologna last year on holiday, and I'd kind of picked up on who he was, and was getting into Bologna and stuff.
And did somebody say, because we've already got Sweden's right back?
I mean, if you offered me a 21-year-old Lustig, I'd still take it. The older model had, you know, was a bit rusty. But the reality is that, you know, even despite their soon to bankrupt themselves signing this week, they are no that good, you know? And we have properly tooled up, you know, even since the game. You know, the guys we brought in are nuts. Like, I was telling a boy in work today, an English boy, about, you know, one of our... I was talking about Julian, and how, oh, we've got this good centre-half from France. And he joked, all right, Southampton, I'll come along and steal him. Which, you know, I get it, right? That is kind of what happens. But then it reminded me, I said, well, actually, we've now kind of... the shoe's on the other foot, you know, because we are now, or we have now scooped up one of Southampton's,
yep,
you know, 16 million project signings, which, you know, if you told me that we were going to pick up Foster, Wanyama or Van Dijk, you know, on the other side, you know, not all of them are going to be a success. As it happened, two of them definitely were, and Foster's, you know, career for whatever reason, you know, went a different direction, fortunately back to us. Mm-hmm. I'm perfectly happy with that. Southampton weren't buying him for no reason.
Yeah.
Because he was the best Celtic goalkeeper in my lifetime. And now we've signed in this winger that, I'll be honest, yeah, I'd barely, you know, never heard of him. I then find out he scored against us home and away for Malta. And, you know, he looks like a bloody good player. He played a game, I was watching on YouTube, he played away at Man City for Basel in the Champions League.
Yeah.
And put in a, like, an absolute masterclass. You know, that's why Southampton bought him, I guess, because they saw him do this. So you've got a guy that I've never heard of that's not even kicked a ball for us yet. He's going to be better than their best player.
I mean, the only thing I'd say about not having heard of him, without going into too much criticism, because I'm about to praise the club for the champ for their for some of the signings. He is a guy we could have signed for £2 million. 3 years ago,
But is that when Basil got him, though?
Yeah, when Basil got him.
Have you ever been to Basel?
No.
You ever been to Switzerland?
I have.
Yeah.
If you offered me a lot of money to go and play football in Basel, I'd go Basel and play football, to be honest.
Yeah, but we did have a deal. There was a verbal deal agreed, and then we did the usual of coming in with an offer that was below what was agreed, and then that anyway. The transfer window itself, Andy. So we brought in 11 players in the transfer window. What do you make of our transfer window?
It's been a strange one, really, because I think I think Tierney was always going to go. I think that was a given, and the way in which the whole transfer window charade works, I kind of get annoyed about it in the same way that some other people tend to get, is that I was resigned to Tierney leaving. The fact that it doesn't happen until the 11th hour, to me, I just think that's about marketing management. And Arsenal know that they're going to get that player. Celtic know that they're going to get that player's going. Mm-hmm. But you have this kind of like vacuum that needs to be filled, where supporters, media, just build up all this speculation because it's not been announced as to whether he's going to go or not. And I mean, I just felt early in the summer, you know, once you heard the kind of the news that Arsenal had made a bid, you just think, well, he's going to go there. So I think then for me, and this is where, you know, I get frustrated with Celtic's transfer policy, but I guess I get frustrated because by definition, we are going to have a model where we are going to be signing players that aren't that well known. And in some cases, if you look at the likes of Julian, I mean, 7 million is a relatively small amount these days. But it's good that we can find that money to buy a player like that. But of course, people will be unsure because they're too busy thinking, well, we sold Tierney for 25 million. Mm-hmm. And if he was worth 25 million, I know he plays in a different position, but you could use Bolingoli. How much do we pay for Bolingoli? £3 million.
£3 million.
So people quite naturally are going to say, "Oh, we've sold a player for 25 million, and we've only bought one for 3 million. That's regressive, and you know, downsizing." But our whole model is based on buying somebody like Bolingoli, who you hope goes from being a £3 million player. I'm not saying he's going to be a £25 million player, but his transfer value will escalate quite quickly playing for Celtic. And I think that's just, it's hard for us to accept sometimes as supporters, but, you know, we ain't going to be chucking £25 million.
We couldn't afford the wages of a £25 million exactly. player. I mean, that's the whole reason why Tierney's gone for 25 million, because his wages are 70 to 100 million, to 100 yeah. grand a week.
But I think because of that, we also forget that with the likes of Edouard, I mean, not so much this summer, but last summer, I think it almost went out of people's heads that because we'd had Edouard on loan for a season, we signed him really early in that window, mm-hmm. and we paid 9 million for him. Well, you know, whatever we think of Peter Lowell, and maybe he is risk averse and you know, doesn't kind of write the checks when he should write them, but to pay 9 million pound for a striker, French under 21 striker, that's big money for us.
It's enormous money for us,
and we're reaping the rewards. And I'll say it now, just simply because transfer values are still on the rise and will continue to rise, we will probably sell Edouard for more than we got for Dembele.
Oh, I think Edouard will be, depending on how we do in European football this season, and Edouard will be our most expensive sale.
Yeah.
Sale.
Yeah. great. So I think, you know, that it's almost that kind of like behavioural stuff of the transfer window, and you know, by definition, we do some of our dealings late as well, and I think what threw it a little bit this season was because the English transfer window closed so early compared with the European transfer, and people still do naturally look towards what's happening around the English market. You know, even though, you know, we've got a few players from there over the years, but we are shopping in a different market now. So I think overall, and Sunday just kind of, we're coming full circle, but, you know, the finishing back four just proves, actually, I don't think that was a one-off, that we've actually done pretty well in the transfer window. If anything, we've got too big a squad now.
Do you know, it was funny, because I was listening again on Monday to the podcast, the Sports Sound programme from the Sunday, and I was just thinking about how you can't win, because Pat Bonner then said, with the players they brought in, Neil Lennon's biggest challenge is going to be keeping everybody happy. There's going to be a real problem because he's got too many defenders. And I thought, just 2 weeks ago you were criticising us for not having enough defenders and not having enough options. And so, Anthony, what did you think of the transfer window?
I tweeted last week a joke about, remember the sort of Burley, Larson, Mahe, Jackson photograph?
Yeah.
You know, it's that idea that, you know, you bring a whole gang in. I love that. And the other day, I mean, you know, by the end of the window, I was like, I think I'd started it before the end of the window. I'd started to, like, I was like, all right, if Celtic aren't going to have this photo, I'm going to Photoshop it myself. So I started collating all our signings pictures,
yeah,
you know, with them holding the shirt up. And I started sort of Photoshopping it together, just for my own amusement. And then eventually I just gave up because we've signed so many players. It was going to take me weeks. You know, to do it well, it was going to take too long. So basically I gave up. But we've signed a pile of players, but all of them I'm happy about. My one problem with the transfer window is not getting Rogic and Sinclair off the wage book. Because, I mean, I love Rogic, but I think his time has been and gone. We're not going to make a lot of money from him, realistically, but he'll be on a decent wage. So if we could have shifted that, I would have. And then Sinclair, I saw some people moaning last week on Twitter about, oh, Sinclair's been so mistreated, yada, yada, yada. The guy's been paid a shitload to play for Celtic and not always played that well. Yes, he was occasionally good for a goal, but, you know, he wasn't a great, great Celtic player. I'm not having it. And I've got nothing against Scott Sinclair, but I'd rather have seen him move on. I don't think he's going to kick a ball this year. You know, he could be like Chris Commons last season.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He's there, but he's not really there. You know, every international week, he'll jump on his plane to Dubai and pretend that's a life worth living and come back and train. Good for him. But I don't think we're going to see a lot of him this year. And we're not going to need him because we'll get El Yanusi and, you know, Christie and whoever, you know.
I tell you what I thought was interesting. So we signed the guy from Man City and the young guy from Man City,
yeah.
And the guy from Man United. And I went online and looked, and the Man City fans seemed to be saying, oh, well, that's another one of those youngsters from that team who's gone out the door. At least we're getting some money in from them. Hopefully he has a good career, right?
Yeah.
The Man United one, the Man United fans were all going nuts. Can't believe we've let him go. Who's allowing this to happen? He's fantastic. But then, interestingly, yesterday when Neil Lennon was interviewed for winning Manager of the Month award, he was saying the Man City boy, Frimpong, is that his name?
Frimpong, yeah.
He's going into the first team squad, but he needs to assess Leo Connor more to decide whether he's first team squad or goes into the development squad first.
Mm-hmm.
But it was interesting that the supporters was the other way around.
That doesn't surprise me, because I mean, if you look at Manchester City, they're not the club they once were. You know, Manchester City are an absolute giant now.
Yeah.
And down to the facilities, down to their ice baths, down to their corner flags, they have got the best of absolutely everything. And their youth academy, you know, you've got, was it Andy Cole's kids, you know, going to Man City's youth academy because they know that's the place to be.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. You know, Man City are an absolute machine now, who have put money everywhere it needs to be, and you're not going to be picking up players from their academy that aren't decent. You just have to look at, and even their scouting of youth players. You know, you had photos of, well, you get Paddy Roberts, you've got Mir Beaton, you've got Ncham, you got Bayata was all right, not a great player, but he was all right. Do you know what I mean? All these players have come through City. And Frimpong, I've no doubt Frimpong's going to be an absolute star. If he was coming from anywhere else, you know, I think it's a bit of a lottery. Mm-hmm. If I had to pick, I'd say I bet Frimpong makes it before the young Irish centre-half makes it. Do you know what I mean? I wouldn't bet at this point that... What is that? Did we sign three of Ireland's under-19 team or something like that?
Yeah.
Yep.
We've got Connell, the boy from Southampton, and the boy from Man United...
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They're young enough to the point that I would not hang my hat on them being great Celtic players. Do you know what I mean? It's just like signing a player from Livingston, to be honest. I'm not confident they'll cut it. I hope they do, of course. But there's no guarantee. Whereas I'd stick my arm out and say Frimpong will be a good, good Celtic right back. He'll be the Ncham of right backs.
Mm-hmm. So overall, happy with the first fraction of the season, Andy?
Yeah, it's like the same every year at this time is that, you know, I mean, I'm really only interested in Celtic and club football. I mean, I'm interested in wider football, but international football doesn't do a lot for me.
Yeah,
I can get interested at World Cups, and so I actually feel really frustrated at this time that, you know, you come off the back of a good win, big win. There's a lot of momentum now in the club, a lot of positive feeling, and really you just want the next Saturday to come round, and see your team kind of like winning another game or performing well after that. And, you know, what have we got, 2 week break now?
That's one of the things that bugs me about the way the football calendar is set up. That we sign people on the last day of the transfer window,
yep,
and then they don't get to see that guy play for 2 weeks.
Correct.
2 weeks. And then we always seem to have an away game, the first game back after the international break. So we will sign people and then you don't get to see them. You know, we sign people in August and you don't get to see them play at Celtic Park until the end of September.
Mm-hmm.
And so the other thing that's happened in the last week or so, Anthony, is the Europa League draw. So Lazio, Rennes and Cluj. Don't know about you, my gut feel is we'll probably beat Cluj home and away.
Yep.
And then Rennes and Lazio. What's your expectation, Anthony, from that Europa League group?
My gut was, we're through. We'll get through that group. You have get. There's nothing there that frightens me. You know, slightly more. I mean, I'm not the kind of person that is usually confident or overly arrogant in this situation. But that group came out, and it was like, yeah. You know, we could beat any of those teams. Cluj, that's the weird question mark about this pre-season, that we everything, there's one black mark and it's the Cluj game. And ironically, it's such a black mark because of the money and all that, but ultimately it puts us where I'd rather be. I would rather be in the Europa League competing with teams than in the Champions League getting our asses handed to us, which grudgingly is probably more likely as it would have been. You know, for example, I know the coefficients were different or whatever, but Slavia Prague's group, you know, if we were just extrapolate that we were Slavia Prague and we ended up, I know it wasn't possible that we would have been in that group,
but
that would have been terrifying. What was it? Dortmund, Barcelona and I can't remember, someone else who basically...
It was a bit like us getting the PSG, Barcelona,
Man City.
Man City group. You know, it's like getting a group like that.
Yeah, there's no fun in that. You know, just watching Celtic, just hoping we get not murdered is no fun. And obviously, you get your Barcelona nights and stuff like that. But ultimately, I think we're better off being in the Europa League and playing proper football games against teams of a similar level. So that, in that sense, I think the group's quite interesting. The Rennes pre-season friendly was, you know, it was a horrendously dull match. But you could see they were good. You know, you could see they were really good. I kind of got the impression that, I mean, we had like Luke O'Connell and stuff playing that day. So it wasn't top Celtic in top form, but they looked like they were in cruise control and, you know, cruised to a 0-0. I think it was 0-0, wasn't it? So I think Rennes will be pretty good, you know, when the time comes. But I also think we'll be pretty good when the time comes. So I really think it'll be an interesting group. I liked it. I laughed at the... I felt the jokes about the Green Brigade and the, you know, fascist Lazio fans were hilarious. But I also think it's something that needs addressed. You know, we got another fine this week because of the firecrackers or whatever, these stupid children that can't contain themselves. It does my nothing. Do you know what I mean? That's my subscription to Celtic TV getting flushed down the toilet because some idiot thinks fireworks are exciting. I mean, for fuck's sake, grow up. You know, sorry, I'm going off on one here. That's pathetic. And, you know, we need to cut that out. You're some dickhead with a balaclava. Oh, it wasn't one of us. It wasn't one of us. It was some Swedish Celtic. Fuck off. Do you know what I mean? Just, we need to ban these people. You know, we can't slag off other teams that do this shit when we're basically the worst for it.
Well, we're not the worst for flares. If you look at the Legia fans at Ibrox,
right, okay,
they are considerably more flared. I did think it was interesting, actually, just in terms of the difference in culture, because when I saw an interview with the, or a quote from the Legia Warsaw manager after the game, when he was asked about the flares, and it was pretty much, well, that's what fans do, isn't it?
Yeah.
He didn't seem to really grasp what the issue was.
Yeah, that's true. When I went to the Slovan game when they won the title, I mentioned it before. Yeah, they had controlled flares. You know, when Slovan score, there's these little pods where people are allowed to do it. You know, so that is part of the experience there. So that is strange. Would that be banned on European nights? I'm not sure.
Well, I think John Paul Taylor went across to, I think it was Sweden he went to see how they deal with it. And they actually have the guys who are in the equivalent of the Green Brigade.
Yeah.
There's authorised guys for doing flares. And they are all firemen.
Right.
and they have a guy at the front. They have a couple of guys at the front with buckets ready to take the used flares away and ready to deal with any issue if a flare is a problem flare. Yeah. So I think some countries that we are dealing with it is, we just have to accept that it's there and we can't stop it. So the best way to deal with it is to control it. I think that's the...
Yeah.
Their attitude. Anyway, Andy, your thoughts on our Europa League group chances?
Yeah. Funnily enough, I'm maybe not as confident as Anthony. I think Rennes are a pretty good team.
They're currently joint top of the French league, same points.
Yeah, they've beaten PSG this season.
Yeah,
competitively. I think they could well prove to be difficult for us. So I agree with Anthony. I think we'll beat Cluj home and away. I think just simply because Lenny and the players will want to kind of right the wrong of the Champions League qualifier. Lazio, a little bit more of an unknown quantity for me. But it's always tough going to Italian teams. So yeah, if we win our three games at home, then I think we'll get through. But I think the games against Rennes and Lazio will be quite tough. But I'm happy with the draw. I think the level of teams that we've been drawn against, yeah, we should see some good competitive football.
Okay, well, with that, anything else anybody wants to raise about the derby game?
The celebrations were just... I'll watch them three times a day for the rest of the week. Do you know what I mean? Just go back and watch them again and again. The footage, you know, just the sort of raw footage of, you know, the whistle's gone and they all go to the corner. Christy, Bolly, Julian, all of them just mad for it. You know, just... it doesn't get better than that.
Yeah. Well, we touched on Celtic TV a little bit, but and I know they put it online for non-subscription people as well, but that what do they call it? Unique angle.
Yeah.
That is just anybody who's not seen it, watch that for the second Celtic goal, because the roar that comes from the 800 Celtic supporters there is just absolutely phenomenal. It's just amazing.
And also the final thing on that, one of the things I love is, particularly for games against Rangers, is when you've seen a still photograph of the Celtic player as the ball's just about to go in the back of the net and looking at the Rangers fans behind. And it's amazing because it's always a combination of resigned acceptance, absolute horror, and then there's always one person that you see in the crowd and you think, what are you doing? So if you see, there's a picture of, I'll see if I can put it up with the podcast, a picture of Johnny Hayes as he's about to score, and everybody's doing that. And then there's one woman, if I manage to find the picture, there's one woman sticking her hand up as if she's trying to ask a question. It's really odd. One of my mates says, actually, it looks like she's trying to cast a spell on the ball to try and stop the ball going in. But it's but yeah, that's my other favourite thing, is to look at the look on their faces as they see the thing going in. Anyway, I will say thanks very much, Anthony Money and Hullboy.
Cheers.
Cheers, Harry.
And we'll speak again soon. Cheers.
See ya.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
So I hope you enjoyed the podcast with Anthony Money, and Hullboy. You may have seen online that the Celtic FC Foundation are looking for volunteers. They've got a food bank collection before the Kilmarnock game on Sunday the 22nd of September. That's a 1 o'clock kickoff. So looking for volunteers to assist with that prior to the game. So if you go on to Celtic FC Foundation .net, you'll see details of that. There's also, they just launched the November sleep out. So again, they're looking for volunteers to do the sleep out, one in Glasgow, one in London. So if you want to go on, you'll see everything fantastic the foundation does and everything that it will be doing for the Christmas campaign. Anyway, enough of me. That was me, Harry Brady, with him, Hullboy, at Hullboy. You can find him on Twitter, and at Anthony, without the H, Anthony Murray, 25, also on Twitter. It's me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight and God bless. Good night.
Brand new bright tomorrow, make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.